Hello, everybody. It's Jake Senzino, host of the Wheelbarrow Profits Podcast, here with my co-host, the multi-family mentor, the coach, chef, father, six, best-selling author, the G-Daddy in a suit today, Gino Barbaro. Gino, how's it going?
I thought you would appreciate that. I am going to lecture at Flagler College tonight. They want me talking in a college. I should not be stepping foot in a college, bro. I'm the last person who should be there, and it's going to be on entrepreneurship. So I'm bringing the socialism pain, my friend. I'm gonna destroy them. I'm gonna have a little bit of fun tonight, you know. On the call today. We're gonna be discussing some first world problems. We're gonna be discussing some negotiation, and this is gonna be an awesome podcast. Everybody, take out the pen and paper, and I promise you will get a ton of massive value from our guest.
Well, very good. Today's guest is the author of Ego, Authority, Failure. Derek Gaunt has over 29 years of law enforcement experience, including serving as the commander of hostage negotiations teams in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. With a passion for teaching and interpersonal communication, Derek is truly an innovator in leading and inspiring those around him. So without further ado, Derek, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me back. It's been too long, guys. We had a pretty kick butt time the last time we were together. So hopefully we can duplicate that.
We bring out the panya, as I like to say. And I'm so pumped today because I see behind you there, you know, you got a book and it mentions ego. And that was literally what stalled our real estate career in the beginning, because I was a dumbass with a huge ego and I didn't realize how to displace that thing. So before we even like dive deep into the book, tell us why that word is in the title and where that comes from.
Because of what you just mentioned, if it's not monitored, if it's not understood for what it is, and it's tied to negative emotions, it can derail anything that you're trying to do. You know, your relationship with your kids, closing a real estate deal, buying a car, getting a better, you know, mortgage for your house, whatever the case may be. If your ego gets in the way and you don't recognize it for what it is, it's powerful enough to destroy. It can destroy nations. You look at some of the dictators from years past, even to dictators now. Where is it all coming from? It's all coming from ego, and it can have disastrous consequences if you don't rein it in.
Derek, why did you write the book?
I wrote the book because I found that we've been talking for decades about the importance of emotional intelligence in the workplace, you know, and bosses, managers, leaders have never been given anything concrete beyond the generic, you know, create a better work environment, engage your employees, don't be a jerk, mind what you say. And all of those are great and are appropriate, but none of the thousands of books and articles that have been written told you how to do it. Mm-hmm. And so not only do I have cautionary tales in there of what toxic leadership looks like, but also what good leadership looks like and what the good leaders were doing to make their environments better, to engage their employees. And then I laid out step-by-step skills that anybody can adopt, insert it into their daily interpersonal communications, and you will separate yourself. You'll engage your employees better, and you'll create an environment where they're not doing what you ask them to do because they have to. They're doing it because they want to. And
sounds
it's all
like
in the matter. Yeah, it is. And the beautiful thing about it, guys, it's not rocket science. These skills were developed by cops for cops, and cops want things as simple as possible, as readily for recall as possible, and as practical as possible. And so, long story short, and I don't mean this to sound disparaging, but if I can teach it to them and have them apply it, I can teach it to anybody.
So can you share your journey a little bit going from a police officer into the entrepreneurial world? How did that look for you? Because you have a structured life, you're a W-2, you have a pension, then all of a sudden that's gone. And wow, I'm in the new world here.
Yeah, well, it takes a leap of faith. There's no, you know, it's the old adage of, how do you get adjusted to a cold pool? You just got to jump into the thing. Mm-hmm. And you don't know exactly what the reaction is going to be, and you don't know what your response is going to be, and you don't know the dynamics that are going to come at play that can, you know, divert you from the success that you're seeking. And that's the hardest part. The fear of the unknown is the hardest part. Fear is the single biggest driver of human decision-making and behavior. And so it took a lot of soul searching before I actually took the leap. I was confident in what Chris Voss had. I was confident in his dream at the time. And I watched as him and his son slowly built the company, slowly started to attract clients. And the clients were, they were obviously becoming more proficient and more productive. And I knew it was something that, you know, was my wheelhouse. Negotiation was my wheelhouse. So I figured when the planets lined up and the opportunity presented itself, he offered me the spot, I took it. But you're right. It wasn't easy because of the structured environment. You know, law enforcement is a paramilitary operation. And so there's a lot of structure. There are a lot of rules. There are many lines on the road, and you have to remember which lane that you're in. And now I'm in the private sector and there's less structure. There's a lot more deviancy in the corporate world than I ever imagined. There's a lot more. You guys in the corporate world,
we're not corporate,
in the business world. Let me put you in the business world. You guys yell at each other far more than we ever yelled back and forth with a hostage taker. It's amazing to me. Mm-hmm. One of the guys that we were recruiting for the Black Swan Group was doing, he's doing kidnap and ransom work. And we approached him and he says, I don't think so. My brother is a muckety muck at a tech company out west. And he tells me about the negotiations that he's involved in. And it's just, it's the most slimy and cutthroat thing that I've ever heard of. And I'd much rather do what I'm doing now than immerse myself in that world. Now think about that for a second. He would rather be on a sat phone with a guy in a jungle that's got an American citizen tied to a tree. He would rather negotiate with that guy than he would in the business world. It speaks volumes as to some of the bad habits. I'll just leave it at that.
When I'm looking at that looking at it, I can see the why, because the guy in the jungle, you'd probably know what they want. The guys in the business world, you don't know what their objectives are. And you're looking at both. And I've read Chris's books and I've listened to his lectures. It's about the autonomy. I love when he discusses it. Can we go into the differences? I mean, between what you're doing in your previous life and the corporate world, what are the differences in negotiation when you're dealing with those two different types of scenarios?
In the business world, you guys are the, not you guys, people in the business world tend to be more concerned about what their goal and objective is than the goal and objective of the other person. Mm-hmm. And that gets the sequencing all wrong. You want to go into the room with all of your data and information, throw it on the table and say, here's why you should make this decision. And the other side says, not doing it. And they're saying they're not doing it because you haven't taken the time to demonstrate that you understand what it looks like from their side of the table. That should be your mindset going into the conversation. If I was him, what would I be thinking about me? What would I be thinking about my ask? What would I be thinking about this conversation? What would I be thinking about the people that he represents? And that is where the negotiation should start. It's always tactical empathy first. Your goal and objective is what it is. You'll get to it in due course. But the caution I would throw out is don't be so beholden to your goal and objective that you get tunnel vision, because there are things that you are going to discover in the conversation with your counterpart that you had no idea about. If you're willing to listen, if you're willing to get out of your own head and just listen, there's 3 to 5 black swans in every single conversation. A black swan is a piece of information that, if uncovered, dramatically changes the course of the dialogue and, by extension, the outcome. And so, generally speaking, it's tactical empathy first, your goal and objective last. So the biggest difference that I see, going back to your original question, is the sequencing of the conversation. My goal and objective as a hostage negotiator was to do what? Get the people out.
Yep.
Get the people out, get the bad guy to surrender, right? You know that. Jake knows that. The people listening to this all know that. Even the bad guy taken out of that situation would know that. Now, how many times do you think I led with that during the course? How many times do you think I called inside and I said, hey, Jake, it's Derek from the police department. Listen, my goal and objective is to get all the hostages out and to take you into custody. So why don't you put the gun down, let those people go and come on out. How many times do you think I started my dialogue with that?
And it doesn't make for a good story either.
No, it doesn't make for a good story. And the fact of the matter is, I never started my conversations like that. And so that leaves you scratching your head as to, well, if that was your goal and objective, why don't you lead with that? Because he's not ready. He's not ready to hear that. And he's not ready to hear it because there are negative emotions, negative dynamics that he has associated with me and with the event that I need to diffuse before I can return him to a normal functioning level and then begin to direct his decision-making. So it's all about sequencing, sequencing, sequencing. Tactical empathy first, your ask comes last.
At Jake and Gino, we teach what we call the SPY technique, S-P-Y. We've trademarked it because it's the type of negotiation where you're looking for the seller, that's the first aspect. The property is the next one, and you are the last one. So it's the same type of tactical empathy. What is their objective? If you're looking, we've taught on creative financing. Most students lead with, I need to get the deal. I need to get it for this price. They don't look at what the seller needs. In real estate, you're looking to solve a problem. So if you're looking at a deal that needs to be seller financed, what does that seller need? Does he need his whole payment? Does he need all the money now? Can we structure the payments differently? Don't think about what you need. Think about what the seller needs. So it's the same exact idea. Think about it. I want everyone to write that down. It's SPY, the seller first, then the property. See if the property works for you. I mean, is it a good deal for you? Is it a 1980s build? Is it in part of your buy right criteria? And then you are the last person. So if you same thing that Derek has been saying, think about that sequencing. It's very important, and lead with that and try to always solve the problem. Derek, what other mistakes do you see people make when they're negotiating? Because that's a really big one, thinking about themselves first and the golden rule. What else do you see out there?
It's pretty much all tied into that. Some of the other things are not listening at the deepest level. You know, there's five levels to listening. The first is intermittent listening, where you're listening long enough to get the gist of what the other side says, and then you start focusing on your internal monologue. The second level is rebuttal listening, where you're listening long enough for them to say something that you know you have an answer for, you know you can argue with, and now you've turned off and you're waiting for them to shut up so you can jump into the conversation and tell them how brilliant you are. A level above that is you're listening for logic. Why does it make sense to them? If this is their worldview, what are they trying to tell me as a result? Lesson above that, you're listening for emotion associated with the logic. What are the frustrations, the betrayals, the anger, the confusion that they're displaying? And then the fifth level is empathic listening. That's listening for emotion and logic and world meaning and their particular narrative. How does this fit into who they are in the world? If you don't understand who they are in the world or how they view the world, you don't understand them. If you don't understand them, you have no chance of influencing them. And the problem is listening at level five is hard work.
Tiring,
it's
right?
Exhausting.
Yes.
And so as a result, most of us don't want to do it because of that fact. It takes too much energy. I would argue that it's impossible for you to operate at that level 24/7. Because it takes too much work. Most of us spend our days around levels one and two. But the key is knowing when to flip the switch. Mm-hmm. When you've got skin in the game or the conversation is of import, then you have got to be able to switch to listening on that deeper level. And this is going beyond going, okay, yeah, I get where they're coming from, but this is a true understanding of this is what they're faced with. This is what they're up against. Mm-hmm. And the sooner you do that, the sooner you will start to demonstrate tactical empathy, which will lead you to rapport, which jumps you up to trust-based influence, and then ultimately getting them to change their behavior, to sign or not sign, or agree or not agree, to resolve the issue.
So I'm quoting Stephen Covey here. People see the world as they are, not as it is, right? That's very important. And I think Stephen Covey's fifth habit, seek first to understand, then to be understood. I mean, I talk to my wife about this all the time. We have six kids. To have that level five listening, she's like, I can't do it all the time every day. It's freaking tiring. So it's like they wear you out. But when you're in a negotiation and something very important, I think you really need to drill down, put away the devices, get everything out of the way, and really focus in and just listen to them. Listen to their word, where their words are coming from, because they view the world a certain way and you view the world a certain way. Figure out how they're viewing the world. Seek first to understand them and then let them know. Understand you. I think that's a really important point.
Yeah, absolutely. And to expound on that point, people don't always say what they mean. You know, in every negotiation is a tough conversation. And tough conversations, as I mentioned, negative emotions, negative dynamics. And in every tough conversation, there is going to be a presenting negative emotion or dynamic, and then there's going to be a latent emotion or dynamic. Mm-hmm. You serve yourself far better by going after the latent. What did they not say by using the words that they just use? What are they not telling me by using those words? If I tell you, if I'm a Chechen terrorist and I phone you as you're the authority of the Russian government, and I say to you, I want Russian boots off of Chechen soil, and I want Vladimir Putin to resign today. What am I not saying by using those words? What is the message that I'm trying to convey? What is driving my behavior based on that statement? What is the latent dynamic? That's a very vivid word picture to paint. Russian boots off of Chechen soil. With that statement, what am I saying to you?
Beat it.
Yeah, it goes deeper than that. Why do I want you to beat it?
We don't know.
Because you're an occupier. Russian boots, you're there. You're.
And if you are an occupier, think about your own home. If I was standing in your foyer of your home and I refused to leave, what kind of emotions would that spark in you?
Mm-hmm. Great.
Exactly. I'm Russian boots off of Chechen soil. Translation, I don't recognize you as my government. You are an interloper. You are an oppressor. You are a conqueror. Mm-hmm. You don't have any sway over us. I've said all of those things and I use none of those words. I said Russian boots off of Chechen soil. So my point is, everybody's going to have a latent motivation behind the words that they use. You have to stay genuinely curious in the conversation to pull that out. And once you start to identify those latent emotions or dynamics to the other side, you look like a mind reader. Because Russian boots off of Chechen soil said nothing about oppression, not recognizing the government, but those are all of the things that were buried beneath the surface. So if you stay in a negotiation, you stay genuinely curious, you're going to uncover some remarkable stuff, especially if you keep the mindset that everything that you're going to need to know to move the other side, they're going to tell you.
Going back to the beginning, what did you just do there in that example? You removed the ego, you operated with your higher level self to meet the objective. Where the comments that you just made were inflammatory, not like, you know, because once you broke it down, they were inflammatory, you know, they were like aggressive, right? Whereas the person trying to meet the objective, you're taking yourself out of that and not operating in that space. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. The other side is never the adversary.
Yeah.
You know, don't look at negotiation like you're going to war or it's going to be a battle or it's going to be a fight. That's not your mindset. Because that automatically pushes you in an us versus them, and us versus them automatically means you're going to be defensive of us. And so look at your counterpart as a teammate in a problem-solving venture. And whatever you're trying to achieve, the two of you, that's the problem. How do I make this guy a teammate to help me solve this problem? And it doesn't mean that you have to like him. It doesn't mean that you have to agree with him. You just have to be able to say, this is how he's viewing things. Because I can tell you, this is one of the problems with common ground. People make a lot of money using common ground in the negotiations. And I'm not going to tell you that you're not going to make money using common ground in a negotiation. However, what do you do when you got no common ground and that's all you rely on? Then you're stuck. And so I never had common ground with any of the guys that I negotiated with back in my law enforcement days. I didn't like any of them. I certainly didn't think they were my buddies or my friends. I didn't agree with them. I didn't like what they were doing. But that was beside the point. I used tactical empathy with them, not because I'm a nice person, but because I know it works.
This may be a little bit difficult to answer, but how do you prepare for negotiation? I mean, when you're out there and you're dealing with terrorists, that's one mindset. But business negotiation, a negotiation.
Well, Gino, you said the terrorists are nicer than the business people. So we got to, you know, you might be like escalating that right now.
So how do you prepare for it?
Yeah, because preparation is everything. I mean, I know you want to get information, get data, but what steps you need to take to really get ready and.
Yeah. So first of all, we talk about gathering information. That's the normal part of people's prep. They want to gather as much information about the counterpart as they can. The problem with that is you're getting information that they want you to have. We all hide information from people that we're dealing with on the other side of the table. You do it. Jake does it. I do it. Everybody does it. And part of your job is to uncover that information. No matter how much due diligence you do going into a discussion, there are going to be things that you're only going to learn as a result of that discussion. Mm-hmm. And so you have to change your mindset. Your mindset should be, think about this acronym. You gave me SPY, I'm going to give you CAVIAR. CAVIAR. Part of changing or part of improving your preparation is changing your mindset. The C in CAVIAR stands for curiosity. Stay genuinely curious. Try to uncover those black swans. The A in CAVIAR is acceptance. You need to accept the fact that you're going to get attacked at some point during the conversation. You don't know when, you don't know how ferocious it's going to be, but it is going to occur. Part of being able to accept that is staying curious. Your mind cannot be curious and triggered at the same time. You have to be one or the other. So you can be angry or you can be curious, but you can't be both at the same time. So curiosity and acceptance are the first two letters. Time permitting, vent. That's what the V stands for. Vent to a colleague, a comrade, somebody you trust, the good, the bad, the ugly, all the moles and warts about the relationship, the negotiation, the discussion. The more you dump outside of the room or outside of the call, the less likely you're going to have one of those sneak out on you and have your inner voice betray your outer voice during the conversation. The I is to identify the counterpart's negotiator personality types. We have three within the Black Swan group: assertive, analyst, accommodator. You read the book, mm-hmm. so you know yes. how they line up. You have to figure out which one they are to the best of your ability and understand which one you are. Because based on who they are, you're probably going to have to modify how you conduct the conversation. Because with three personality types, what that means is there's a 66% chance that the person you're dealing with on the other side has a worldview different from yours. Mm-hmm. With the three personality types, each of them have something as important to them as making the deal. For the assertive, it's to be heard and respected. They'll blow a deal up as long as they leave there knowing that you know they're the man. For the analyst, it's data and information. The deal can go to hell in the handbasket as long as they've either confirmed the information they already had or they became smarter as a result of the conversation. And for the accommodator, it's relationships. Relationships in the moment. Relationships in the moment are more important to them. They want to make sure that they treat you with fairness and respect and kindly. They want to be liked by you. And so each one of them require a different type of cadence in the conversation. For example, we are big proponents of dynamic silence, intentionally creating a void in the conversation to prompt your counterpart to fill in the space. You use dynamic silence on an accommodator, you're going to shut them down. They're going to automatically think, oh crap, I just made Gino mad. What do I do? Do I need to apologize? And now their mind is going off on to the far end of the fear spectrum. You go quiet on an analyst is cool with quietness because an analyst likes to contemplate. So the longer the silence, so know that if you use dynamic silence on an analyst, those wheels are turning. And if you go silent on an assertive person, what do you think they're going to do?
Screw you, man.
They're going to keep talking. They're going to keep unloading. They're going to tell you like, I'm just so brilliant. I've stunned them. They can't think of anything to say. So I'm going to stay at the pulpit here and I'm going to keep preaching my gospel. So you have to understand that going in. The AA stands for accusations audit, which is your proactive attempts to mitigate the negatives as the other person sees them. And then the R is just remembering, as I mentioned earlier, your adversary is not your counterpart. It's whatever the issue is. So that little shift, that little acronym, that cheat sheet, put it on a post-it note next to your phone before you begin the negotiation, and you'll start to put yourself in the right frame of mind before you ever start to engage.
I love that. Before we go to the short answers, I wanted to ask you, what are the couple of things that you've learned working with Chris Voss? I mean, you've had extensive experience. He has basically similar skill sets as you, but what did you learn when you joined his team?
Oh, I learned how hard the hustle was. You know, when you put out your own shingle and it's your shop, it's you've got to be multifaceted. You got to be able to spin on a dime and pick up different challenges that may be outside your wheelhouse. So more than anything, it's probably been adaptability and flexibility. Chris has got a really, really sharp mind. He inspires me to constantly be on the hunt insofar as improving myself and improving the content that we're putting out as the Black Swan Group. So we're constantly late hours of the night. We're hitting each other up on Slack or text and throwing ideas about how we should modify and change what we're doing. And so that's probably what I've learned the most is always being hungry to do better, because that's what people are expecting. I can't tell you how much things have changed since the book was released in 2016. You know, we've taken concepts out of the book and we've made them more potent, and we've taken our game to another level. So it's been a great motivator to have him at the head of the table as far as the Black Swan Group is concerned, because he's always trying to get better. And that encourages and motivates us to do the same.
So the book came out in 2016. How old is the Black Swan Group?
2008.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah. So definitely a nice little run there. Cool. All right, guys, let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsor.
Are you looking for ways to improve your life?
Here at Jake and Gino, our mission is to empower students through financial education and the vehicle of multifamily investing.
Yes, Jake. We agree that a person with financial intelligence can change the world for the better.
We've created our proprietary three-step framework, Buy Right, Manage Right, and Finance Right, that we teach to our community. This framework, along with education, our one-on-one mentorship, on-site boot camps, and the amazing community, has propelled our students to massive success.
We've all been there. We've had so many students that have been able to shift their mindset overcome limiting beliefs, and set a clear path to achieve their goals. Whether you're currently fixing and flipping, wholesaling, or buying single-family rentals, and you know that multifamily investing is the right vehicle for you, I encourage you to visit jakeandgino.com/apply to schedule your complimentary consultation with our team. And I want to let you know, this isn't a high pressure sales call. It's really just a discovery call to get to know each other better and see if we're a good fit for working together. And if for any reason we're not a good fit, our team has tons of resources we will share with you to help you along your journey.
If you're ready to stop spinning your wheels, go to jakeandgino.com/apply and schedule your call now. All right, we are back. Now, I'm going to go a little off the rails here. You got my mind working earlier, and some, you know, things are popping up here. So,
okay.
Gonna just keep it real here for a second. What's harder to negotiate with, hostage taker or kids? Be real.
It's kids.
100%, right?
They're 100%. Just
ruthless. Without, they are the terrorists.
Has more to do with them being with their brains not being adults yet. You know, when you've got kids, you can expect an immature, underdeveloped prefrontal cortex up until the age of 25.
Oh.
And so.
A lot of croc brain there, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I think it's pushed to 35 now. I'm talking to a lot of people. So.
I'm still developing, but you know, that's the other thing. So what, how does, you know, cause we're kind of in the realm now of emotions. Tell me how emotions play into the negotiation. So if you're negotiating with somebody, you're the objective person trying to get you the result, right? But the person you're negotiating with is emotional. How do you,
all right, hold on a second. So first of all, your mindset. You're the objective person.
Exactly. I'm going to say, what makes you the objective person?
the other side is saying to you, yeah. I'm the objective person. So if I'm objective and you're objective and our objectivity doesn't align, then somebody's objective is faulty. So just be careful of labeling yourself as normal. I'm the normal one in this conversation.
No, we're not labeling ourselves as normal. We're cool, calm, collect, looking for the objective result, dealing with somebody that is, look, there's emotional is real, right? There's are people that have high emotions. Let's just assume that we're operating from a space of objectivity, and the person that we're dealing with, it has a track record of being highly emotional, because this is a real thing when you're getting into it, and that creates a problem, right? Because they throw that up as a shield or defense because maybe you don't want to hit it head on. So I'm just curious, assuming that Derek is objective and Gino is emotional, how do you handle that? Any tips or tricks for that?
So go back to what I talked about earlier, curiosity. The emotions are coming from somewhere. You got to figure out what it is. When somebody gets highly emotional with you during a negotiation, they're telling you probably one of three things. A, I'm under tremendous pressure on my side and you have not picked up on it. B, you're not listening to me. Or C, they're trying to manipulate you. You got to figure out which one it is, because it ain't going away. By ignoring it, by pretending it's not there, or trying to explain it away with logic. You got to figure out where that's coming from. Something as simple as, it seems like I just said something to set you off. It sounds like X is very important to you. It sounds like I'm failing to be sensitive to an issue that you find of value or importance.
That's the one right there. Because Gino and I had a call where we were negotiating to a certain extent last week. And I felt, and Gino felt as well, that the person that was presenting was getting a little emotional at times. And you could see it in the face, right? And to that last point, it was something near and dear to their heart that maybe we were not valuing at the same level that they were. So it was getting very personal, okay? And that's where the emotions started to come out. And I think we backed up at that point, but it definitely was a real thing. And I was, where are we going from here? Because this looks like it's starting to go south pretty quick, right?
Yeah, and another thing to keep top of mind is human beings, regardless of the space, regardless of the conversation. They want somebody else to understand what they're going through,
mm-hmm.
how they feel, mm-hmm. what they're up against. The faster you can demonstrate that you get that, the faster you'll start to make inroads and move them in the direction that you want them to go.
We 100% lack tactical empathy during that call, if we're being honest with ourselves, you know.
Well, you know what it was, Jake? The problem is that that side is very, very bought in. They need something and we can walk away. We have all the power. We don't need to do that, right? And I always think of the residential real estate. I don't know how, big shout out to all the residential real estate brokers out there. Don't know how you do it. There's a lot of emotion. People selling their homes, looking at the color of the walls, looking at the carpet, looking at the refrigerator. Multifamily real estate, we don't care. Let's look at the numbers. It's a lot easier. Unless you have a mom and pop who's owned the deal for 30 years, then it feels like it's as if their own. But big shout out to the residential brokers. You need to go back and listen to this entire podcast because this is right up your alley because you deal with it every day. And that level five listening, at the end of the day, you're going to be tired. You're going to go home. You're not going to want to listen to your wife or your kid.
Yeah, that's so true. That's so true.
Yeah, so
it's exhausting. You mentioned when we first started the show, getting to simple. Do you have any advice or ways to get to simple? We were talking about the book and you're mentioning, you know, getting to simple. And I wrote that down. That stuck with me. Any tips or tricks on that?
Well, I mean, when I say simple, when you look at the negotiation nine, or the nine skills in the Black Swan method skill set, they were adopted from the active listening skill set that was developed in the 1950s in the area of psychotherapy. We stole it for use in law enforcement in the mid 1980s, and it's seen increased use in the business world since the mid 2000s. Now, keeping it simple is what all of those skills are based on. There is nothing, I can't think of anything simpler, for example, than a label. When you just simply say, it looks like, it seems like, it sounds like. Everything about the negotiation nine is simple because you don't have to do a lot of the work. In essence, you are, to use a baseball analogy, you are at bat all of the time. They're pitching and you're just deciding on which pitch you like the best. And so with all of these skills, it doesn't get any simpler than taking what the other side gives you, you repackage it, and you give it right back to them. And so people always ask, I didn't know what to label. Well, what did he say? Well, he said he thought my prices were too high. I didn't know what to label. It sounds like you have a price point in mind. It sounds like price is the bigger consideration before you decide if you're going to go with this type of vendor. You're taking what the other side gives you and you're giving it right back to them.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing complicated about that. What's complicated is forgetting all the bad habits that you've been taught for however long you've been doing whatever it is that you do. Because I can tell you there's not, I can't think of one, there may be one, but there's not too many negotiation training companies out there that teach it the way we do. And we teach it from a position of experience, not theory. And so keeping it simple, think about the label, think about the mirror, think about the dynamic silence, otherwise known as the quick 2+1. It doesn't get any simpler than that. The label, it looks like, it seems like, it sounds like. You look, you seem, you sound. If you want to be more engaging, simple. The mirror, repeating back the last 1 to 3 words that the other side gave you. How hard is that? All I got to do is listen hard enough to hear the last 3 words and then give them right back to you. Upward inflection turns it into a question. Downward inflection turns it into a declarative statement. And dynamic silence, shutting your mouth. It doesn't get any simpler than that. So when we get off of here, I challenge all of your listeners, and I challenge you too as well. When we conclude the podcast, sometime between tonight and tomorrow, go to your favorite coffee shop. Order your coffee, ask the barista how he or she is doing. And then when they respond, you just simply say, it sounds like, whatever, based on what they just told you. So you go in and you say, how are you today? And the guy goes, and your response would be, sounds like the manager's been kicking you in the teeth since you clocked in at 6 a.m. this morning. Now, I don't know if that's
it. I love you. Thank you so much for understanding me. They start hugging you and stuff, right?
It doesn't get that drastic, but watch their facial expression. Those people get, how are you doing, 150 times a day. And 148 of the people don't care how they're doing. And so when you just show some interest with a label, watch how much more information about their cruddy day that they're going to throw up on you because nobody's taking the time. And now the people behind you are like, come on, Jake, you got to move, bro. I got to get to work.
And I'll listen, I'm in level 5 listening right now. You got to shut your mouth. I'm going to go home exhausted today because I'm going to hear about this barista. Hang on a second, folks. Whew, I'm worn out. Man, that's going to be rough. So, all right. So tell us where to get the book and where we can find it here.
Amazon.
Okay.
We got both the hard copy. We're going to put the ebook back up. We had some editorial problems with the ebook. That's going to go back up soon. And then, of course, it's on Audible. After I put it out in hard copy, the amount of, or the number of people that would come up to me and say, when are you going to do it on Audible? Mm-hmm. Please do it on Audible. Whatever you do, put it or read it in your own voice. And so I finally did that. And you guys are broadcast aficionados. You guys are talking in front of people behind the mic all of the time. I don't. And I'm not a good reader from a teleprompter. And so if you could have been with me in the recording booth when I was trying to record words that I had written.
Did you get through it though?
Did I get through it? Yeah, I got through it. I said, I'll knock this out in 3 days. Day number 9, I was in a corner blowing spit bubbles, standing in my own urine. Going, I don't know why I did this.
This is the power of partnerships. You know, for our books, I will read like an intro because I'm in the same camp as you. Like I just don't enjoy reading. And then the G-Dad down there plows through it in a few hours.
But Derek, you got the DJ voice. Your voice is perfect. What are you talking about? It sounds...
I appreciate that, but it doesn't sound that good when I'm stuttering and stammering over words and running them together.
The producer's telling you, do it again.
Yeah,
do it
yeah,
again. Do it again.
Your stomach just made some noise. Do it again. What'd you eat before you came in here? Your stomach is going crazy. Do it again.
Dude, yeah. The barista gave me a taco, and it's not settling to you. All right. Before we go, give us a book reco besides Ego Authority Failure.
Oh, you really want one?
Yeah, of course.
Douglas.
Pulling those tricks on us right now. That's a spacing. He's doing it to us right there.
Dynamic silencing right there. We didn't know what to do ourselves, Jake. We're like, we're suspended.
I was an assertive. I had to fill in the space. I couldn't help it. Sorry.
Yeah. So
Greco.
I'm going to give you Douglas. The Autobiographies of Frederick Douglass. Mm-hmm. I ordered it probably 6 months ago, and I looked at my shelf at all the books that I've ordered that I hadn't cracked open. That one jumped out at me, so I cracked it open. And I don't think I got through the introduction without all 8 of the introduction pages looking like a yellow page phone book because I had highlighted so many ideas and other passages that I thought were memorable. And what's amazing to me about reading the book, first of all, as I was coming up in American history, I didn't get a lot of Frederick Douglass in my history text. Second of all, I'm just blown away that this book was written by an uneducated slave. When I say uneducated, I mean formally educated slave. And his gift with the pen is just unbelievable. I can't believe that I'm reading something that was written, you know, in 1868, 69, something like that. It's just crazy.
This is an autobiography?
Yeah, I
love autobiographies.
Douglass is a compendium. He actually wrote 3 And they're all three in this one. I just started my life as a slave. And it's just amazing. It's amazing that this guy is writing better than what his contemporaries would be today. So
Point, formal education, which, you know, maybe we need to look at that too, right? So.
What's that?
No, yeah, you're right. Saying with a formal education. So maybe we're doing something wrong these days. So.
Yeah, right. No, for sure. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we are definitely doing something wrong. But yeah, that's my recommendation.
And best way for listeners to get a hold of yourself, Black Swan Group, et cetera, and tell us what you guys got going on right now.
info@blackswanltd.com. That'll get you into the mailbox. blackswanltd.com is the website. We got a lot of free stuff there. We got a lot of stuff that you're doing yourself a disservice if you don't take advantage of some of the free resources that we have in there. January, we started a monthly real estate coaching call. I think I have about 120 agents on the call every month. It's the second Thursday of every month. We get together, I throw out a little content, and then we just chew the fat. What are your challenges? What are you facing? What are your fears? And there are a lot of challenges and fears in the real estate businesses. I'm sure you guys already know, and help them walk through that, help them understand the importance of improving their interpersonal communication skills to maximize their business potential.
All right. So I need some gold from you before you hop here. All right. Because everybody, look, price is many times an issue. Okay. And I'm thinking like a wide receiver and some kind of like option route right now. So they throw price at me. It sounds like price is an issue. Give me somewhere to go from there. Give me, you know, the corner route to the end zone here. Where can we take that?
So you tell them it sounds like price is the issue.
Yeah.
And they say, yeah, price is the issue. It sounds like that's the only consideration that like you need.
Yeah.
That's the only consideration that you're taking under deliberation before you make up your mind. In other words, it seems like the terms are okay. It seems like everything else is lined up. It's just price is the issue. It sounds like maybe you're willing to risk losing this home for saving a few dollars in the short term up front. I like to throw risk and loss in the same sentence because we're loss averse. Mm-hmm. And so people will tend to have a change of mind, change of heart when you throw risk and loss into the same state. Mm-hmm.
What if they just say yes?
If they just say yes, what to what? Which
one? Sounds like you sound like, you know, price is the only issue, and this is the only thing hanging us up. Even though you risk losing the whole house over just this price, and you say yes, you're correct.
So it sounds like what I bring to the table as an agent,
yeah,
has no bearing on your decision. It sounds like I failed to.
You're right.
It sounds like I failed to adequately explain to you that I'm not just an agent. I'm an advocate. Would you be against me walking you through exactly what I intend to do to knock it out of the park for you?
Yeah, I got you. No, it's definitely because you need somewhere to go, right? And so if they shut it down, you need that the option routes, where you're going to take it from there. So that's definitely helpful.
And so the option route is also what I said earlier, stay curious.
Yeah.
Boots off of Chechen soil, cut your price or I'm going somewhere else. It's the same thing. What are they not saying? Why do they not trust you? Anybody would pay you. I was working with an agent where this guy was adamant, I'm not paying more than 500K. Adamant, I'm not paying more than 500K. And when the agent went back and started to talk to him about the resistance and the hesitancy over the 500K and diminish some of those negative emotions that he had associated with her and the whole home buying process, now they closed a deal on a house for 680 or 660. This is a guy who was adamant, I'm not paying more than 500K for any home. And so she took the time to go after not what the behavior was, which is the price is too much. Why is he saying that? And it has more to do with maximizing the net. It has more to do, there's something else there. And the price is just, as you mentioned, I can't remember, it's either you or Gina, but that's the blocker.
Yeah.
That's the hedge that they're hiding behind because there's something else at play.
Very good. G-Dad, anything to close us out here?
Well, Jake, Derek, 29 years as a law enforcement officer. At one point in his career, he's looking off the cliff and he's saying, should I jump to the other side? Should I go corporate? Should I go to the entrepreneurial? And it sounded as if he was wavering, Jake. Should I do it? Should I do it? And finally, I think he got the offer from the Black Swan Group. And I don't think there's any looking back. I think he's grown. I think he's put out some amazing content. He's become a great negotiator. And all the stories that he's had, I find it ironic that he looks at the business world as the underworld and as the terrorists and the criminals as they're great to negotiate with. So I find that to be interesting. The caviar acronym was really great. Everyone should go back and listen to that. Curiosity, acceptance, vent, identify, accusation, audit, and remembering. That is an amazing acronym. Like Derek said, put that little stick note there. And when you're talking to people, I'll leave it with this. You know, Derek mentioned it in different words, but Stephen Covey's words are seek first to understand and then to be understood. And you will make a lot of friends and you will close a lot of deals, boys. That's all I got, Jake.
Love it. All right. Fellas, appreciate it. Derek is, you know, great as always. Thank you so much for your time. And we'll see you soon.
Thanks, Derek.
All right. Talk to you soon.